If I love you, I'll give my last.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. We're doing another season preview podcast today and we're going to be looking at the Milwaukee Bucks. So to speak about the Bucks, I'm joined by the host of the Locked On Bucks podcast, and that is Eric Name. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again, Josh.
Good to have you back on. I think this is the third year in a row that you are here to do the Locked On Fantasy Preview for the Milwaukee Bucks. This is a team that is relatively steady, but still some areas of change and some things that we do need to pay attention to coming into this season. So let's start though by looking at the projected record for this team. The Vegas line is at 45.5. You, in the tradition of all Locked On hosts that come on, have gone over with 50 wins and 32 losses for this Bucks team. This team was obviously showed some signs last season. Now they have a competent coach in charge. Is that the main reason, the coaching change? Is it the free agency upgrade? Is it internal improvement? Or are we looking at a combination of all those things that see this team pushing perhaps into a top four seed?
I like the way you just put it, with a competent coach. For me, when I guess one thing that Bucks fans have struggled with this entire offseason is they watched Jason Kidd for the last 4 years.
Yes.
And then they watched Joe Prunty, who was Jason Kidd's lead assistant for the final half of the season. So they've watched it for 4 years. So Bucks fans all know, like, okay, rotations are going to steady out a little bit. And, maybe they'll actually space the floor around Giannis Antetokounmpo. And maybe they'll stop running the defense that doesn't work. And for Bucks fans, it seems very obvious that not only is Mike Budenholzer an upgrade, when you get Jason Kidd, I've said it a couple times, he wasn't just a bad coach. It wasn't just that they weren't getting enough out of the team and the roster. It was that he was actively hurting them. That, by running that defense that didn't make any sense, he was actively hurting them and making things worse by, running guys like Giannis and Chris Middleton into the ground, which for fantasy might not be the most helpful. But by running guys like them into the ground, they were a worse team for it. By not spreading the floor, it's funny, people always obsess over the center Giannis lineups. Center Giannis lineups last year ended up featuring Shabazz Muhammad and Jabari Parker. It didn't make any sense. The times where you're going small to hopefully put more shooting on the floor, you're actively putting guys that don't want to shoot on the floor. So there was just so many times throughout the season where you had a question, what exactly is Jason Kidd doing here? Or what exactly is Joe Prunty doing here? And I don't know if from the outside, if you didn't live that day in and day out, that you fully understand and comprehend just how bad it had been for the last couple of years. And I think moving from a coach like that to a very competent coach, and you can argue where Mike Budenholzer is on the level of coaches around the league, but just to have a very competent coach, I just think it's a huge upgrade.
Yeah, look, anyone who listens to this podcast or has listened to it regularly would be well aware of the Jason Kidd, where he sat in the power rankings of coaches. Quick tip, he was about 31st out of 30 NBA head coaches, and I've been calling for him to be fired for many, many years. So many people are well aware of the idiocy of some of the stuff that he was running, the inconsistency in the rotations, the inconsistency with the lineups that made no sense, the defensive scheme, all that stuff that you've touched on. And now we've got someone who, again, who might not be the best coach in the league, but as long as he's top 30, then he's probably an upgrade over the Kidd-Prunty combination that they had last season. Eric, breakout player, let's go projected leading scorer, because that's the order that I like to do these in. It's pretty obvious. It's Giannis Antetokounmpo, who was excellent last season, got to 27 points per game with 10 rebounds and 5 assists. His defensive numbers did drop. He was pushing up to that 2-steal, 2-block mark. He was down to the 1.5-steal, 1-block number last season. He was a guy that people were discussing last season as maybe he's a number one fantasy pick, but the reason he came in as the 7th-ranked player is because those defensive numbers did jump and the scoring went up, but the corresponding dip in defense meant that he hovered around that number seven mark. I've heard Antetokounmpo being mentioned as potentially a number one or number two guy this year. I don't believe it. He's ranked at fifth on Yahoo. I think that's, you know, that's not too bad, maybe marginally high. But for him to get back there, he would need to, Eric, either take that scoring up to 30 points per game or the defense would need to come up. But it doesn't feel like that either of those things, you know, they don't feel like completely realistic possibilities. Or do you see Yanni taking a further step forward in his offense this year?
I think the tough part of trying to figure this out is balancing what will surely be a lower minutes load, yes, with the help that he will receive from Mike Budenholzer, because there's no way that Giannis averages 36.7 minutes per game this year. There's just no way. Mike Budenholzer will not do that. And the same can be said for Chris Middleton, who I'm sure we'll talk about later. Neither of those guys can get that many minutes. So if you're looking at numbers, which all time in fantasy you are, you know, some of those numbers are going to have to come down a little bit. Just naturally by playing 2 to 3 minutes less per game. So I think it's difficult for me to see the points increasing. And the other part of the argument, and this is something that we've talked about on Locked On Bucks, is I tend to think he will score more because the floor is spaced properly. Well, Frank kind of thinks maybe he adds an assist per game this year because there are more shooters out there. And even if the floor is spaced better, everyone's still going to give their attention to Giannis until all of those shooters that they have surrounded him with, you know, with the addition of Ersan Ilyasova, with the addition of Brook Lopez, with those additions, people are still going to force them to prove that they can actually shoot it and not let Giannis hurt them by scoring. So maybe there's an assist to be had there. But yeah, offensively, it seems unlikely just because of, like I said, bringing down his minutes a little bit. Defensively, I think that's where the interesting thing is, because Paul Millsap had a really strong defensive year. You talked about the two steal, two block season. I think the one of the years that Millsap flirted with it, he did it under Mike Budenholzer. And they're two different players, don't get me wrong. But I am very curious to see how Giannis is used. And I know one thing that Mike Budenholzer mentioned during his right after his introductory press conference, when we got to talk to him a little bit about Giannis. And one thing that he mentioned was that he was used to scouting him and used to preparing ways to get Giannis away from the basket. Just, you know, run some offensive action that pulls him away from the basket so that you have an easier way. So I would assume if he's coaching the Bucks, he will do everything in his power to keep him by the basket. So maybe there's a chance that he flirts again with that two block number. I'm not really 100% sure, but if I had to pick one of those being more likely, it would be a bump in those defensive numbers.
Now, if Giannis can keep at 27 points per game, which again, it's going to be tough because we do think those minutes are probably going to come down this season. It's going to have to come defensively, and if those defensive numbers can rise back up, then he can be in that consideration for a top five guy. I'm just not certain that that's going to be the case. The blocks, those numbers can be quite fickle at times, and the numbers, they were considerably low. But again, if that comes back up next season, then that is a reason that we could be seeing some form of optimism in Yanni getting back to that level. But you know, getting all those things to work together might be the challenge in his overall value for this coming upcoming season. Thankfully, Eric, as we head into this coming year, there isn't anything regarding injuries too much to look at with this Bucks team. Everyone comes into the season healthy. Malcolm Brogdon had a serious injury last year, but he was able to return. So we don't have any training camp injuries to really pay attention to, but I am really interested in the guy that you listed as the breakout player in this team, Sterling Brown. I thought he should have been playing more minutes over Tony Snell last year. I think he's the sort of guy you need in the NBA, guy who can hit threes and play defense and play in that wing position. Of course, there is Malcolm Brogdon, there is Snell, they did bring in Pat Connaughton. So you're looking at Brown as perhaps a breakout guy. And what are you meaning by that, and what sort of role are we expecting him to have for this coming season?
Yeah, I think it's tough to know exactly how minutes will play out, but one thing that has been consistent from literally the moment Mike Budenholzer stepped in front of a microphone and talked about this Bucks team is that he likes guys that offensively can pass a little bit and can shoot a little bit. He wants guys that can do all three of those things, and when you look at Sterling Brown, well, those are three things. That's kind of, to me, what makes Sterling Brown an interesting prospect, is that, you know, as a college senior, he shot 44% from the three-point line. And he did have some assists as well. And he is able to handle the ball and make a few plays. And again, that hasn't played quite the same way at the NBA level. But I am very interested to see exactly what Mike Budenholzer envisions for him going forward, because he just has that toughness. Like he doesn't back down from anyone. Every Bucks fan remembers his first couple games, one talking junk to John Wall, and then in three of the first five games he played, he was just picking out the other team's best star and just talking junk to him the whole night. And it was just like, okay, that dude is not afraid of this moment and is ready to, you know, take on a bigger role. He had some problems with fouls last year, but I would assume he cleans it up a little bit. And when you look at, you know, kind of this Bucks roster, I do think there's some minutes to be had. Maybe there's not a ton, which is why I struggle to exactly pick out a breakout candidate. But if you can see his minutes go from, in 54 games last year, he was playing about 15 minutes per game. If you can see that bump up to 20, 25, all of a sudden, you know, maybe that's a player that you can really kind of depend on. As, again, in fantasy, he's going to be a little bit later in the year, but he could hit some threes because that's what he's going to be asked to do. Mike Budenholzer is going to spread the floor. I think he could hit some threes, add some steals. Like, I think there is an opportunity for him to kind of break out and kind of break onto the scene. And if Tony Snell is not able to kind of handle his role, I guess, because it is a pretty simple one. It's shoot threes and play defense. If he does struggle in some of the same ways they did this past year, I mean, I think Sterling Brown steps into some of those minutes and you actually finally kind of get a chance to see what he can do.
If you had to take a guess at it, and you do have to because I'm asking you to, who plays more minutes, Tony Snell or Sterling Brown?
Oh, that is brutal. I think it's Tony Snell, but not by a lot. Like last year, it was like 27 to 15. I think you bumped down Tony Snell a little bit to the 24, 25 range, and maybe Sterling Brown in the 21 to 23 range. So I think it'll be close. Tony Snell probably plays a little bit more, but I do think there's a chance for Sterling Brown that if he does well in those minutes, say through the first 40 games, if that's about what he's getting, and all of a sudden you look in the second half of the season, and maybe he's playing more than Tony Snell by that point.
Yeah, and I can see that, and that's exactly what I've done with their projections, is bumped Snell down and moved Brown up into the spot where they're not too far apart in terms of their playing time for this coming season. And Brown, as everyone who listens to this podcast would know, is a significantly better fantasy option than Tony Snell, who works as hard as he possibly can to do the absolute least with the absolute most opportunity that he has given. Him and Doug McDermott, they have a nightly battle as who can put up as few numbers as possible in as many minutes. I reckon McDermott probably had him covered just, but Snell's, he's just right there. It's a shout out to the old Bulls days of those guys doing that together on the same team. So that was always awesome to see that. Now let's transition a little bit into the two-way guys. Trayvon Duval out of Duke and Jalen Morris, who played for the Hawks last season. Duval had a disappointing college season. He was okay, I guess, in summer league for Houston. Yeah, these are guys that play positions that you need guys, you need depth in, and that's the guard spots. So do you see either of these guys, I guess, playing more than the cursory, you know, 10 games or so? Any of them potentially a chance to find themselves into a full-time roster spot?
I don't really. Duval kind of seems more like a longer-term prospect, considering his age and kind of what he's done to this point thus far in his basketball career. So I don't see that. Jalen Morris has really never been anything all that special. To me, it feels like he was just brought in because the coaching staff knows him. He played for the Erie Hawks last year, and I would guess that's kind of the same reason why that he's here this year. The coaching staff has a lot of familiarity with him, and hopefully they can have him run some of the sets that they like and the offense that they like. So I don't really see much of a chance there. The only thing that makes this tough is that no one used two-way guys more than the Bucks. Like, the Bucks just used up all of their days as quickly as possible, and they would just cycle through two-way guys. And a lot of that had to do with injuries and depth problems last year. And I would say I can't speak for injuries. Injuries may happen. But as far as depth goes at this moment, I think the Bucks are pretty well set in that category. Like, I do think this is a pretty deep team. And you mentioned a guy like Pat Connaughton. I don't know if he's going to play this year.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know I don't know how he gets on the floor, and he's already better than both these guys. So I think their depth has been shored up a little bit, so I don't see much of an opportunity for either of those guys.
We also don't have Jason Kidd and Joe Prunty coaching, and no need for them to randomly start Gary Payton, which is stuff that happened for this team, legitimately did happen for absolutely zero reason at all. You know, no instances of Malcolm Brogdon sitting an entire half on the bench when he was completely healthy. So we've got that to look forward to, at least when we talk about this team moving forward. But Budenholzer, we've talked a little bit about the transition there, but in terms of play style, in terms of pace, from what he was able to do in Atlanta versus what, you know, Kidd was doing, you know, what are we looking at that's maybe different here? We're talking more threes, more ball movement, a faster paced team. What's the difference that Budenholzer brings as opposed to the previous coaching staffs?
It's going to be fun to watch, because for as long as Jason Kidd was around and as long as I was asking him questions, I was always told that the Bucks were going to play faster. Always trying to play faster. You know, you got to get Giannis out there in transition. You really got to find a way to play faster. Oh, Jabari Parker's coming back. Yep, we got to play faster. And they never really did.
Never happened.
And I've always said that every team says they want to play fast, but the teams that want to play fast, you can see they want to play fast. And again, that seems self-evident, but there is a difference between, you know, when you get a transition opportunity getting out there and going out in transition and scoring, which the Bucks have been good at for a long time now because Giannis is incredible at it. Jabari is very good at it as well. And then how you actually create pace is in your half-court offense. Our guys going to get yelled at if they shoot a 3 5 seconds into a possession? I think in Milwaukee that happened quite a bit of time. I don't think the previous regime enjoyed quick threes in any way. And I think that, to me, is kind of emblematic of what was wrong previously and what you're going to see improve this year, because this Bucks team has been in the bottom five of three-point attempts for a long time now. Their three-point rate has been terrible. They just don't get up enough threes, and now that they do have more shooters, that should help. So I think just the idea of seeing this Bucks team take a 3 6 seconds into a possession, that seems like something that they will actually do under Mike Budenholzer, and something that they never did under Jason Kidd. Like, that was just something that was totally frowned upon in the previous regime. I think that, to me, helps kind of symbolize how this will change. I think you're going to see a lot more threes, and they have a bunch of catching up to do. They've increased their three-point attempt rate over the last couple of years, but so has the entire league, and the entire league has increased it at a much higher rate. So the Bucks got to find a way to shoot more threes this year. I think Mike Budenholzer will do that. I think they'll play at a faster pace. And maybe much of that has to do with what they do in the half court offensively, but I do think you're going to see this team kind of open it up a little bit offensively, which, if you're a Bucks fan, has to be pretty exciting, because they kind of stumbled into being the seventh most efficient offense in the league last year. And now they're actually going to embrace efficient, modern ways of thinking on the offensive end.
One way they're going to be able to attempt more threes is by having a guy that does have a semblance of an offensive game, not John Henson and not Tyler Zeller, as their starting center, and that is Brook Lopez, who came across after a disappointing season with the Lakers. He slots in as the starting center on this Bucks team. I don't think we're getting Brooklyn Nets Brook Lopez, where he was scoring 20 points per game and doing it on pretty high usage, almost 30% usage. But I also don't think we're getting 23 minutes, 13 points, and low usage Brook Lopez that we got in Brooklyn. I think somewhere in between, he is, Eric, the almost guaranteed starter. And we should be seeing a big bounce back, I believe, from Brook Lopez, especially in that free throw percentage, which, again, I say this on this podcast all the time. Look at the guys that have 10 percentage point drops in free throws. There's always a negative issue going on with them in terms of unhappiness, and that was the case with Lopez in LA. So I imagine he gets back to being a 78 to 80% free throw guy. The minutes go up, and he is a lot happier in this Milwaukee squad.
I totally agree. I think as I go through signings around the league, I think this might be the best one of the offseason to get a guy as talented as Brook Lopez that can just do so much at 3.6, 3.8, something like that, million for the season. I just think it's a steal for the Bucks, and especially with the way that he now plays, that he has added that three-point stroke. He is shooting a bunch of threes each time. Like, he just kind of turned himself into a stretch five overnight, and one thing we always talk about, and we've talked about this for years on Lockdown Bucks, about Thon Maker, was with Thon, Thon is the ideal kind of prototype as a center to play next to Giannis, because you have someone that stretches the floor. Like, Giannis can't shoot, so you have to find shooting at a different position, and you can't do it at the four, so do it at the five. And that's always what's made Thon exciting, but Brook Lopez can actually shoot, shoots at a very high rate. Both volume and percentage could be better, but 34% will get it done. And then on top of that, he's also a mountain of a man, which Thon Maker is very much not. So I do think you're going to see a bump back up. And again, I don't know if we're ever going to see a day where he plays like over 30 minutes again. I kind of imagine and envision those numbers 25 to 27 minutes per night. I don't know if we'll get all the way up to 30, and I think that's both to kind of manage him just being a huge human being and having foot problems and having some injury problems in the past. Like, I think 25 to 27 minutes feels pretty reasonable for him. And I do think the Bucks are going to try to find ways to use him. He's just an efficient scorer, and that's huge for this Bucks team.
Yeah, it is definitely huge for them. I don't think he's coming back to that Brooklyn guy, but he is a guy that I think should be, you know, pushing that top 80, which is about where he's being drafted in many spots. And I think a big bounce back season is on the cards for Brook Lopez for this coming season in Milwaukee. You've got the most likely player to be traded on this team, Eric, as Matty Dellavedova, who struggled with that ankle problem, which kept him out a significant amount of time last season. I guess his position this season, it's a little bit unsure, especially if Sterling Brown takes that step up. That might move Malcolm Brogdon back to more point guard minutes. And then it's hard to see exactly where Dellavedova fits in that rotation. Do you think that there is a risk that even if, say, he isn't moved, that he's not an every night big part of the rotation?
Yeah, I certainly think it's possible. And I think if I picked one, because you prefer for me to pick one, but I tend to kind of lump Dellavedova and Henson together on just about everything. They both have those contracts that no one wants to trade for, but the Bucks have been actively trying to get rid of them for. They're in that $9 to $10 million range, which just is not something you want to pay for guys that are backups, and they are going to be even more backup-y this year, because when you look at Delly and kind of what won Sterling Brown. Also, they drafted Dante DiVincenzo, who Mike Budenholzer is a big fan of. You look at kind of a little bit of a logjam in front of Delly, and then you look at adding Brook Lopez. And if you're the Bucks, I think it means a lot more for you to get hopefully 20 solid minutes out of Thon Maker every night as opposed to 20 minutes out of John Henson. Like, Thon could actually be a part of your future. You need to know what you have with him. So there's a chance that, you know, both of those guys really struggle to see the floor. They both have those contracts. It was part of the reason why I struggled with this question, because if the Bucks had their choice of someone that they could just move from their roster right now, it would be Delly or Henson. Unfortunately, someone has to want that.
That's right.
Someone has to take that $10 million. And the Bucks to this point have been unwilling to, you know, part with a first-round pick to get rid of it. And I think that's probably about the going rate for a $10 million contract for someone else just to eat that for you. So unless there's kind of a budge there, I don't know. So it's just tough for me to look through this Bucks roster and see anyone that's particularly likely to move, especially now that we are kind of not all the way through the offseason, but pretty far to the end of the offseason. You know, if you were going to try to trade a guy like Eric Bledsoe, I think you would have done it in like July as opposed to August, end of August, September. To me, that's why I had a list, Delly and Henson. Those are the guys to me that seem the most likely to be traded.
Henson's the most interesting one from a fantasy point of view, though, because he was the 133rd ranked player last year in the 26 minutes per game he got, mainly because of the high field goal percentage, good rebounds, and block numbers. But I think, like you just mentioned, Eric, that he's not even going to be on the court most nights. He's going to be the third string center. And again, I'm going to harken back to this all the time. We don't have Jason Kidd coaching who's going to come out and say, we're going to run a two-man rotation and then run a two-center rotation and then run three centers every single night after that. So there's going to be none of that sort of confusion going on. I think Henson, behind McKerr and behind Lopez, is just not going to see the court. So there's very little value in him unless there's an injury to either of those guys. I believe, like you, that he will be that third string third string center, and that's not even including Tyler Zeller or Christian Wood, depending on whether they end up making the final roster here in Milwaukee, which is a possibility. You have you've referenced it already, the draft pick, the big ragu, Dante DiVincenzo at pick number 17. Like Pat Connaughton, like Dellavedova, like Henson, I think it might be a bit of a struggle for Dante to see the court this year, just with Sterling and Snell and Brogdon and Bledsoe ahead of him. He does have a battle on his hands. Not here to say that he is Rashard Vaughn, but his summer league didn't inspire a huge amount of confidence dealing with that groin injury. I believe he averaged half a point per game in the two games he played, Eric, but he's better than that. But it's going to be hard to see too much of him this year.
Yeah, I think Bucks fans listening to this will be happy to hear you say he's better than that, because after not seeing him make a shot in summer league, maybe they're questioning it. But yeah, I would agree. I do think he's a little bit better than that. But it's going to be tough. And that's kind of where, if I have a question mark on this roster about, you know, how things kind of tend to go down, I am curious how he fits into the rotation, because Mike Boonholzer was a big Dante DiVincenzo guy. He was extremely happy with the pick, and he was one of those guys that, as I mentioned earlier, he made sure to mention on draft night, he passes, he shoots, he handles. He can do all three of those things, and I think there's plenty of questions if he can do all three of those things at the NBA level. But, you know, Mike Boonholzer believes he can do those three things, so does that mean he hops in front of a guy like Sterling Brown? I think that would be a shame, because I think Sterling Brown has already proven more than Dante DiVincenzo, but that's, to me, a pick from the previous regime. Does he believe quite as much in someone that he doesn't see as his quote-unquote guy like he does with Dante DiVincenzo? So to me, that's a really big question, but from what we've seen from DiVincenzo thus far, from what we've seen from Sterling Brown, and really the rest of the wing players on that, or wing/guard players on this Bucks roster, I struggle to see how Dante DiVincenzo is really able to carve out a role.
I want to use that to leverage myself into talking about another number 17 overall draft pick. DJ Wilson was bad last season. He played 3 minutes per game. He did the old DiVincenzo himself and averaged 1 point per game. His G League numbers weren't considerably better. I didn't understand the pick at the time. I don't still understand it. I don't think that he, in his second season, is necessarily going to be pushing for a role with Ersan Ilyasova now in the fold as well. Like, what are we? Did I miss something with what he did last year in the G League? Because I just wasn't impressed with it.
No, you didn't. I still remember on draft night, and this, I mean, I think this speaks to DJ Wilson and may end up defining his career. We had the press conference for the pick. It was John Horst, Jason Kidd, and I asked a question to both of them and said, one of the question marks with DJ Wilson coming into the draft was, can he rebound the basketball? That is something that he struggled with, but, you know, if he's going to play the four in the NBA, like you say, and, you know, also maybe play the five, do you have any concerns about, you know, his inability to rebound at the college level? And Jason Kidd fielded the question and said, I'm trying to remember the exact words, but something to the extent of, well, he'll...
Oh, no, Eric cut out at the real opportune time. You completely cut out then, Eric, right when you were saying that quote.
Okay, I can go again.
Yeah, just hit you. It was the perfect setup. Jason Kidd said, and then it all disappeared. So hit us with that quote again.
Jason Kidd said, "Well, he'll fit in just fine because no one else on the team rebounds." Just like you just picked him. Am I missing? How did you just pick? And that's how you feel about it. It was the most mind-boggling moment that a part of someone covering the basketball team, because they had just picked him. And as the season played out, as we watched DJ Wilson play for a little while, well, he doesn't really rebound. Nope. And I don't know if he really has a position in the NBA. He doesn't... and we saw it in some of the game, is that what would be best for Dean is to catch and shoot 90 times. The thing that can make him somewhat at the level is shooting the three. And instead, he will take a dribble, but he's not quick enough to game back the dribble. So catch, take dribble, that turns into a stack jumper, which is just the worst shot possible because it's long too. He doesn't get any legs into it. He's not doesn't have a particularly good handle to get people, and it just makes no sense. And it's just such a strange at the time. Understood at the time. I got that hilarious quote, and I don't know where his career could possibly go from here.
Yeah, I don't. He's a prime candidate to have rookie options not picked up in either of the next two seasons as well. I just don't see it with DJ Wilson. Doesn't provide defensive numbers, doesn't rebound, doesn't shoot. I don't know what he does. I don't know. Look, it's first year, it's a bit harsh to write a bloke off, but yeah, it was a weird pick at the time. It's been proven out to be a weird pick, and we'll see exactly how that goes. The projected starting five you've got here, Eric. You've got Eric Bledsoe, you've got Tony Snell, Chris Middleton, Yanni, and Brook Lopez. Let's talk Bledsoe first, because he was a guy that I think many people would be stunned to know was the 22nd overall fantasy player last year, on the back of really huge steal numbers and high efficiency, 47 and 80 is his two percentages, two steals per game, five assists in only 31 minutes per night. I think he might actually see a little bit more playing time this season or around that same mark, and he's going to be a real steal. Yahoo's got him listed as the 47th ranked player. That's pretty ridiculous, but you do have to consider that he has had some injury problems. He was fine in that regard last year. I also don't count the time that he missed in the 16-17 season with Phoenix, because they sat him down and that clearly pissed him off, leading to that trade to Milwaukee. But he had the playoff issues against Boston, we know that, but his regular season, in terms of being able to accumulate numbers and just be consistent in that role, it was fine, and I imagine more of the same for Bledsoe this season.
Yeah, I'm not researching average draft position or anything, but I would assume his average draft position probably gets knocked like 10 to 15, maybe 20 spots in people's minds, because they can't out of their head scare kick stuff. Like, they not get that series out of their head where, yeah, you know, Terry Rozier just flat out outplayed Eric Bledsoe. And the shame of it is that, I mean, there was the final month of the year, shooting almost 40, he was shooting over 40% from three. He was averaging 20 points per game. He was just lighting the world on fire. And I remember going into that series and doing a preview with Locked On Celtics and essentially saying, like, I mean, if you go position by position, like, obviously Giannis is going to have an advantage. Chris Middleton may play someone, depending on how much you like a guy like Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum. And then I said, at the point guard position, Eric Bledsoe is going to outplay Terry Rozier. Like, there's no doubt. Like, Eric Bledsoe is a better player than Terry Rozier. And the exact opposite thing happened. Like, I don't know if the moment was just a little bit too big for Bledsoe. He did obviously seem to get it in his head a little bit and have some problems trying to get through being mentally tough to hear. I mean, everything with Eric Bledsoe in that series just went wrong. During the second half of the season, he was fantastic.
Yeah,
I would imagine he was underdrafted, but if he plays in that, I mean, if you are team gets bad, as I think many would guess they will, Mike Budenholzer's coach, I think he might even have a better season.
Yeah, I think that's a legit possibility. He's going to be someone I'm targeting really, really heavily in drafts, just because, especially on Yahoo, you can get such a large amount of value in Eric Bledsoe. Just with that, where they've got him ranked, which is way too low at this point. The other starter we need to talk about is Chris Middleton, who was excellent last season, should remain excellent again. The 25th ranked player last year. Amazingly, only the third best fantasy player on this Bucks team behind Bledsoe and Yanni, and he was the 25th guy overall. He's just going to be back for more of the same. Maybe he loses a slight smidge of usage with Lopez replacing Henson in that starting five, but overall, I think we're just going to see more and more of the same from Chris Middleton as he put together, you know, a strong season back from that hamstring injury.
Yeah, he's just a fantastic player. It's kind of incredible to think about how he's developed over these years. Like, you think about Giannis and how he develops, and you can just go to Giannis's stat page and see that he just improves so much year over year. But with Chris Middleton and that hamstring injury, I think it kind of stunted exactly where he was going. But when the Bucks first traded for him, he was a throw-in on a deal that sent Brandon Jennings to Detroit for night and Chris Middleton thrown in. And he was a 3-and-D guy in Milwaukee. And then all of a sudden, they needed a playmaker, and in the same year that they experimented with Point Giannis, they experimented with Point Chris, and he got to do some of that, learned a little bit about that. Then that hamstring injury happens and kind of just slows down that trajectory, and then all of a sudden last year again, 20 points per game, 5 rebounds per game, 4 assists per game. Like, all of the, the playmaking with Chris is so, to me, underrated. Like, you just think of him as the guy that takes top pull-ups, that's really great from mid-range, good from the three-point line. And, I mean, he didn't even have a good year from three last year. Like, he's a 40% three-point shooter, and he shot 36% from three. So I think you see that bump back up, and you're going to see him have a ball quite a bit as well again. Maybe it won't be quite as much usage like you mentioned with Brook Lopez there, but he's going to have another great season. And, I mean, you look at his percentages. I don't know everything about fantasy basketball, but I do remember that you want to do well in those percentages, and he does a pretty nice job.
Yeah, one of the best free throw shooters in the league. He's a high 80s type of a guy. I'm not someone who goes out and, you know, proclaims hot takes or anything on this podcast, but I thought that last year, I remember getting into arguments last preseason with people when I told them that Chris Middleton was a better player than Carmelo Anthony. Obviously, I don't think anyone is coming to debate that at the moment, but I thought he should have been an all-star last season. I think he's going to be an all-star this season. He is just that good. He just does everything you possibly want. He defends, he scores, he handles the ball. He just does everything that's necessary. And I think he's got an opportunity to be an all-star this season for the Eastern Conference. So I was going to say you heard it here first, but hey, who knows if it actually comes true and if anyone actually holds me to task over this. But I think he's going to be an all-star. Actually, I might do a podcast on that, just trying to predict my all-star squads before the start of the season. I think Middleton is going to be one of those guys. He is ranked about that right spot on Yahoo, 22. Maybe that's marginally high, but it's not terrible. A third-round pick is probably the right spot for Middleton. Giannis is in the right spot. Bledsoe's the guy that's really underranked. But every other player on this Bucks team seems like they're in about the right spot in terms of their ranking. There are two guys, Eric, though, we haven't really touched on that we probably need to. One of them is Malcolm Brogdon, the Rookie of the Year in the 16-17 season, came back and obviously didn't have the greatest of times last year with the acquisition of Eric Bledsoe and then that quad injury, which looked more serious than what it actually turned out to be, which, yeah, it's always good when things work out in a positive manner that way. But when he did come back from that injury, he did start at shooting guard. You've listed Tony Snell as your projected starting shooting guard there, but do you think that Budenholzer could go back and get Brogdon into that starting lineup? And what are we looking at for his ceiling in terms of playing time? Because his minutes did go up from his rookie to his second season, which I think people might be a bit surprised at. It was just a squeak under 30 minutes, but the minutes at the end of the season weren't quite there as he returned from the injury, even though he was in that starting role before he got hurt.
Yeah, the tough part with Brogdon is attempting to project exactly what his role is. Because he can do a number of different things. He can play some shooting guard. He can play some point guard. So to me, it makes a lot of sense that any moment Eric Bledsoe is on the floor, Malcolm Brogdon is playing your point guard. And then he can also play with Bledsoe some. So, you know, that can eat into some of the minutes that Tony Snell doesn't eat up. Maybe that eats into Sterling Brown's minutes a little bit. It's really tough to project because he can be used in such a variety of ways. That it is difficult to exactly attempt where he's been. And I'm going to be really curious to see just how good he is this year, because I remember talking to Chris Middleton earlier this summer, and he had mentioned the fact that he thought his hamstring injury was kind of a lost year for him. That in that moment, and when he came back, he told everyone 100%, I'm totally good to go. And against Toronto in the playoff series 2 years ago, he just, like, couldn't move. He couldn't play. He wasn't the player that he was. And at times, we saw some of that from Malcolm Brogdon, that he didn't have quite the explosiveness. And he doesn't have a ton of it, but the fact that, you know, you don't have a ton of it and then you lose a little bit of it, that makes it even tougher. So I wouldn't be shocked if he does kind of have a little bit better of a season and plays well. He only played 48 games last year. So to have a full off season, and again, Malcolm Brogdon said he was 100%. He was ready to go as he got back in at the playoffs. But I would wonder if now he had a chance to talk to him at the start of the season on media day, if he would say, yeah, I was 100% of could be at that moment, but that isn't what I actually look like at 100%. Like, I would guess that he can get better and kind of a little bit. So we'll see what injury Malcolm Brogdon looked like and what a healthy Malcolm Brogdon looked like.
The only other guy we really need to touch on for use in fantasy leagues, and it's not for most standard leagues, it's for deeper type formats, is Ersan Ilyasova, who returns to Milwaukee after stints in Atlanta and Philadelphia last season. He projects to be the primary backup power forward. He played backup center minutes in Philadelphia last season as well, so he could be getting the minutes there. He's going to come in and be what they wanted Mirza Teletovic to be. Of course, Mirza had dealing with that blood clot issue, is probably not going to play in the NBA again. So Ersan comes in. Obviously, Budenholzer really likes him. He had him in Atlanta and was keen on having him back here in Milwaukee. And he comes in with a solid 25-ish, I guess, minute per night type of role, backing up Giannis, backing up Brook Lopez as well. Being able to provide you some threes, be decent enough with percentages, and he has in the past shown to be a very, very strong rebounder. And if he does get minutes alongside Brook Lopez, who isn't the best rebounder but helps other players get rebounds, that could be something interesting to watch with Ersan. He's a guy that's got, I think, multiple 20 games under his belt, or at least 20 yep. rebound games under his belt. And playing with someone like Brook Lopez, he might be able to be someone similar to what Ed Davis was last season, someone who could come in and you'd get 7 or 8 rebounds in 20 minutes. Maybe Ilyasova can revert back to some of that. So that'll be something to watch. But his role as that first big off the bench seems pretty secure for this season.
Yeah. They signed 1201 to a deal I would have never signed him to.
Oh, yeah. That goes without saying.
But it just shows how much signing a guy like Ersan meant to Budenholzer and how much he does love him. So, yeah, I feel pretty confident that you can. I mean, watch Ersan a while back and watch him the last couple of years. To me, it just feels like, pencil him in for 20 minutes. Probably 11 or 12 points per game, and probably 12 per game. Like, I just feel like at this point with Ersan, you're going to get that. I can put it up until age 40, and I don't actually mean that, but it just feels like he's so consistent in that regard that, just come out there, that'll pretty much be what I'm at.
The other guy there is Thon McCurr. Again, we've talked about him in passing as the backup center. He's just not going to get enough playing time to really have too much of an impact. There is still some upside in Thon, and they'd be hoping that he could develop into a starting center if they decide not to keep Lopez for the next season. But he is still a long way away from that. Eric, I reckon that'll wrap it up for us talking about the Milwaukee Bucks. Give us an idea of what you've got going on at Locked On Bucks and where people can find you on Twitter.
We are in the middle of Buck Survivor, which is our exercise where we decide which players would be the first ones put out in an expansion draft and which ones would be the last ones put out in an expansion draft. So I'm not going to spoil anything by telling you that number one on our list is Jonathan Boone. No one would ever put him out for an expansion draft. And I don't think I'm going to spoil anything telling you John Henson and Matt Dellavedova would be the first people put out for an expansion draft. So you will have to tune in and listen to everything in between, but I just gave you the top and the bottom of the list. But everything else in between, that's where we are right now. That's the fun part of the discussion, so we're having a good time with that on Lockdown Bucks with my co-host, Frank Ben. And you can find me on Twitter at Eric_Nahm, ERIC_NEHM.
Go over there and follow Eric and check out Locked On Bucks. From memory, you guys did that expansion draft survivor thing last year as well, and it was pretty fun. Or else I've heard that somewhere else.
No, we've done it the last couple of years.
Yeah, exactly. I do remember listening to that. I do remember something. So thank you, Eric, for jumping on once again to speak to me about the Bucks. Guys, subscribe to my podcast. Subscribe to Eric and Frank's podcast, Locked On Bucks, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify. You can also find this show on YouTube. Give it a thumbs up, 5-star ratings, leave comments. You know how it all works. Eric, thank you once more.
Thanks for having me.
Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. John Henson.